Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now, and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
I want to tell you a story to set not only the tone for the talk, but to outline a number of the principles that we're going to cover in it. Stories are very, very valuable because they not only reach us at an intellectual level, but if told properly and if we're receptive, they strike certain emotional chords, because not only do they touch on some of our own past experience and help us relate to the characters in the story, no matter who they may be, but at the same time, because of that relationship with the story, we're able to bring ourselves more deeply into the material. And I want you at all times, and I'll urge you, and you'll hear me do say, right? I'll say, all right, you know, take a nice deep breath right in the talk, and we'll start over at that moment. So here's the setting. There's a father, mother, and a young child. We'll say she's maybe four or five years old, a young girl. And they've come from some place in the Midwest, and it's the first time that they've traveled to a shoreline, a beach, where they're going to stay for a week or so. And it's the first day out on the beach, and the parents are there in the on their towels, and they've arranged a crib-like device, a cage, I guess. Do you remember being in a cage when you were small? Or was it just me? So, you know, that the child could see through but not crawl through, and that was for the safety of the child. And it was somewhat near the shoreline so that at once the child could have the waters kind of rolling up to the edge of where the crib device was, and at the same time as she was playing in the sand, she could be using the water to build the castles and things that she was building. And when they first got out there and sat down, the parents, they laid down, and the kid was just as happy as a kid could be. Here's the water coming rolling up, and then the father, to set an example of how she could get other water, would dig a hole. Do you remember digging a hole near the beach line and the water would come in the hole? Remember how neat that was? You didn't have to do anything at a certain point. You just dug the hole to a certain point, and then the water would start to cave in the sides. Well, the little girl understood this principle as best she could and was able to use the wet sand. And she began to make for herself a beautiful castle there in the enclosure of her crib. Now, everything was just great. And the parents, keeping an eye but also resting, could hear the child giggling. Because, she had little horses, and she'd run them up along the trail that led up to the top of the castle where the prince was. Do any of you remember this when you were small? How many of you are still waiting for the prince to show up at the top of the castle? But gradually the giggling began to fade out, and the parents would look up from time to time, and the child was losing the happiness and something else was taking its place. And finally the father sat up a little bit and looked to see what was going on. And wife said, "What's up?" She said, "I don't know what's wrong." She sat up, and she, being a little more intuitive, looked over, and what she saw was that the child had established the castle. It had built the nice castle, but during the hour or so that it took to do that, the tide had slightly changed, and the waves that were just once lapping at the edge of the crib were now lapping up at the edge of the castle. And you know what happens when the waters lap at the edge of your castle, don't you? Now keep in mind, this is a metaphor for life, okay? And she could see that the child was worried because there was an intruder in her enclosure. And so she couldn't let that go on unanswered. The child couldn't. And now the child instinctively began to build some sandcastle walls. Do you remember how much fun that was? You would build these elaborate walls in a semicircle around your structure so that when the waters came, the worst they would do was just melt the walls. Then you had the time between the next wave to put the sand back and get the wall in place. Now, am I talking to the right group of people here? Okay, I just want to make sure. But gradually, the child began to lose the war with the waves. And the mother recognized that the child was becoming unhappy and stressed because of the child's placement on the beach and the relationship that the child had at that time with what she had to work with. And so the mother, understanding that the child could only understand what the limitations were of its environment, of what it had been given to work with. And she reached in, she pulled the child out, and she said, "Come on, I want to go show you something." And the mother and the child walked into the ocean. Now, this isn't the North Shore of Maui. This is only small waves. And they walk in about 4, 5, 6 feet to the waist of the mother, and then she holds the child delicately, and she puts the child to the waist in the water. And as the wave would come in, the child's, if you remember this, that the leg, your legs would go towards the beach, and then when the waves would wash out, the waves would go back towards the ocean. And they stood there for a little while like this, and the mother said, "I know that you're not going to understand this yet, but there will come a time when you will, and I want to set the seed in you now. I know that the waves were destroying what you had built, but I want you to understand that it was only because of the view that you had, where you were and what you understood. And as I hold you here, I want you to see something very clearly. And now everybody come wide awake, because this is critical to our understanding." She said, "There's always the movement in," she said, "and then there's always what seems to be a pause, and then there's a movement out. And then there seems to be a pause, and then there's a movement in again." But the mother said, "I want you to understand that what seems like a pause isn't really a pause at all. It's just a time of change. It's just a moment when that which is moving in one direction by natural law has to move back in another direction. And there's always that moment where things seem to stand still, but nothing, sweetheart, stands still. Nothing stands still." And of course, the little girl looked at mom, somewhat like some of you are looking at me. "Well, what does that mean? What does that have to do with an extraordinary life?" And that's what we're going to examine. Because the first thing that I want to put forward to you, and you'll see as the time rolls on as I speak, I have a tendency to get more and more animated until I'm just about coming out of my seat. So there's a relationship that we have to have that depends upon you understanding. All I want to do is tell you about what I have seen. That's all I'm interested in doing. And if what I have seen turns out to be something that resonates either with what you have seen in some way, or that you intuit needs to be seen and is understood as something necessary to be seen because it answers questions that haven't been answered in your life, then we can have something very meaningful take place in this time together. Because there is no such truth as there is no truth that isn't truth for all of us. Period. I don't care what you hear and all the rest of the New Age nonsense about there's this truth and there's that truth. In the end, when it comes to what is extraordinary, there is one truth, and I'll get right to the heart of it now. Where there is fear in a person's life, there cannot be what is extraordinary. And to understand the nature of fear, which is something that we're very want to do, There's an abhorrence in a human being to understand the nature of fear, because in order to understand the true nature of fear, one must recognize and see the fear that one has in oneself. Fear is not something that we study at a distance. Fear isn't something that we banish with amulets and icons and things that we call upon to save us when things fall apart. The extraordinary life is the understanding of why there's fear in it, and in that understanding, being able to dismiss once and for all, from that mind, from that nature, that dynamic that produces that kind of darkness that drives men and women the way that it does from pillar to post. So, I want to ask you a question. Take a deep breath. And this is sometimes I ask questions, people think, is this a trick question? I have no trick questions. How many of you, if I reach down here and I pull up my glass of water and I said, this glass of water is filled with poisonous toxins. Who wants to drink? Anybody? Then that's, okay, all right, geez, Mr. Speaker, I came here for that. Clear. Nobody wants to drink it. Okay, now, I'm going to pour half out, and I'm going to fill with nice, fresh spring water the other half. Who wants to drink now? Anybody? Now, so not to belabor this, let's say I do that 50 times. Pour out half, pour fresh water in. Who wants to drink after the 50th movement? Anybody? No. And the fact of the matter is, if I did it 100 times, 1,000 times, no one would drink from the cup knowingly, because knowingly that this cup has in it that which compromises or harms the body, we're not going to do it because our instinctive intelligence prohibits that. And what I want to put to you is, what about when it comes to fear? Can there be an order of ourself that starts with fear that can never be without fear? That's the question. Because just as this cup, no matter how many times I pour out half and pour half in, will always have the toxic in it, so is the level of self, the order of self that has fear in it, ever tainted by that fear, no matter how many times it pours out half of its content through trying to acquire or achieve or attract something to itself that is going to make it fearless.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
Now, how many of you are with me so far? Let me see. I do this from time to time. I ask to, but it's just partially to make sure you're still living, because some of you. What I'm saying to you is that our present life looks at the world around us and our religious, spiritual ideas, whatever they may be, and believes that there is a way in which we can move from what we are presently through a series of ideas and transitions and programs and all the rest of that thing, some kind of an eventual indoctrination, some kind of change that we put ourselves through that changes the essence of the cup. And what I'm stressing and going to show you, and if you'll see it, you'll see it as being true, that this present idea of a life without fear is very different from the fact of a fearless life. Because there is a fearless life. But the fearless life doesn't begin from a life with fear. We don't reach a fearless life through a life that has fear in it. Because any time a human being looks out and feels as though he or she is threatened by something, and it can be the subtlest thing in the world. It can be someone just saying, you know, I don't agree with you spiritually. How many of you get upset when people don't agree with you spiritually? You better raise your hands, because I know you do. You know, one of the earmarks of a fearful person is the hypocrisy they don't see in themselves when life challenges them and they have to retreat into a defensive position that they arm with a smile. The extraordinary life has nothing whatsoever to do with any of that kind of behavior, because there's nothing in the extraordinary life that's trying to prove itself to anyone or anything for any purpose whatsoever. Which is, again, the earmark of fear. Fear is always hoping that something or someone will come along to validate or otherwise approve what we've done and become in our lives. Which means that even when we achieve things, we're still at the mercy of the individuals around us whose approval we've received, because should we lose it, then we'll lose the validation that they gave to us. And who's free that seeks approval? What kind of life is it when a man or a woman has to walk around and every action of their behavior is measured according to the reactions of people around them? There can't be freedom in that. Nothing extraordinary in that except the amount of stress. Now, I'm saying what I'm saying, and I told the story that I'm told, and I'm going to touch on the story back and forth. Because the little girl in the story and the parent who is representing here, Sophia, wisdom, intelligence, spiritual understanding, that little girl, at a certain point, she was having a bang-up time. How many hands ever have a bang-up time? And then he does what? She says what? The environment does what politically, socially, economically? And all of a sudden, my castle, the waves are washing up. And what was the most fulfilling possible experience that I knew to have? And that's the other thing. I want to get this in, because I know some people say, well, you know, you seem awfully intense. And I am. Absolutely. You have no idea. This is throttled back 10,000%. When we do what we do, no one is saying that we're not doing the best we know to do. I mean, no one says, today I'm going to do my half best. We don't. I mean, even when you wake up negative, And you look out and, you know, spiritual, I don't know, get out of my, go away, leave me alone, I just want to be by myself, I want to eat something and I want to take another nap. Whatever the case may be, that's the best that man or woman can do in that moment, because they've run into a wall of resistance that they're blaming on conditions outside of themselves. And there's certain states of darkness, and it is an accurate word, meaning unenlightened. There are states of darkness acting inside of them, and they don't know what they are, and they don't know what to do in those moments with those states. And so the individual responds to the states with the best thing that he or she knows to do, which, by the way, is always handed to them by the state. Darkness will always tell you exactly what to do with darkness. That's how it works. You'll see when we're done here that there's absolutely nothing to be done with these dark states. Nothing to be done with them. Which is how we approach the extraordinary life, but we'll get to that. So I want to make that clear right from the top here. We're not talking, no one's sitting here and judging anyone. Don't you judge yourselves. Because sometimes we all fall down. And when we fall down, so what? You get up. Meaning, that you don't fall down into your falling down and then fall down into that, and on it goes. So when we do the best we can, what it means, and here's a very important point relative to the talk, I have gone as far as I know to go at this point. I have nothing in me that is conscious to me at the moment when I am doing what is defeating myself, because if I had it, I wouldn't be doing it. But the fact that I defeat myself doesn't mean that all there is living inside of me is a nature that can only respond to a challenge with something that puts them in conflict. It just means, and to the point of the little girl, it means that she had gone as far as what that enclosure allowed her. And so the limitation is the actual invitation to something beyond the enclosure. But if we avoid and ignore or deny the limitation, which is what we love to do, then every time that we look out and we meet a moment in which we don't know what to do, we don't know who we are, we feel the fear or whatever the condition is, instead of going into the phony baloney act of being someone who isn't touched by such things. Do you know you'll never grow if you're not touched by such things? And you'll never grow if you don't know you're touched by those things, and then what to do in those moments. And this is what we're talking about. We recognize, okay, this is as far as I know how to go. It isn't as far as there is to go. It just means that what I have been up to this point cannot take me farther. But there is farther to go, and everyone knows there's farther to go just by the awareness of the limitation. So here's this little girl, and at the moment that this limitation is recognized and the experience proves itself to be not fulfilling anymore, then comes mother, comes wisdom. And wisdom recognizes this condition and takes the child into another condition in which, under the exact same laws, she will experience eventually the same limitation. But what happens to us when we meet those moments where the enclosure is too evident, where the relationship isn't working out, where our plans are dashed by whatever it is that happens, where the depression comes back or the regret that we can't shake, whatever it is, when the wall of that takes place around us, we don't wait for wisdom. We don't even know mostly what it means to wait for wisdom. Instead, we turn to our own directives. We turn to solutions that our mind hands us that promise to save us from our suffering, never seeing that if that nature had the way out, we wouldn't be sitting there in the enclosure. How many understand what I'm saying so far? Good. I'll try to slow it down a little bit. So the question is this. Can we understand so clearly what it means to have this life with fear in it, that because we can see the very fact of it, the nature of it, and not because somebody says it to us, and not because we read it in a book, but because we ourselves have become so vitally interested in understanding what it takes to move past, how about this, I'll say it differently. We have become interested in experiencing what it is that we know God put us on this planet to experience, which is not to live in a world that is encircled by states of fear, protected by a mind that generates those fears, but to actually see for ourselves what it is that we've been living from, what it is produced on this planet in terms of our personal relationships, as well as the products of the world that we buy in order to escape those pains. And then for the clarity of our vision, move instead of from this, what I'm using, and this is, I had to choose words, instead of a life moving, try to get to a life without fear, where this fearful reaction, this moment of worry, this pain, where it chooses for me what to do, to move into a completely different order of life. A completely different order of life that I'm calling a fearless life. That doesn't start with fear in it, therefore it doesn't have to deal with what fear says needs to be done in order to complete itself. So to understand that requires on our part a kind of watchfulness, a kind of interest, to tell you the truth. Many people aren't terribly interested in reaching what is the evident limitation of this order of our present self. Because there is so many ways in which this same level of ourself comes up with a new plan. There's always the next retreat, the next book, the next person who's going to say something, the next feather I'm going to get slapped on the head with, or whatever the path may be, a person, the next glass of carrot juice. I don't know. And I'm not denigrating the path. What I'm saying is that the darkness that drives us along, that needs to be understood if we're going to change the kind of human beings we are and live from another order of ourselves. So we have two things to do in this talk now. We have to first understand, well, what is it exactly that's going on that's producing this experience of mine wherein, and I can see it, I may not be anxious to see it, but where I can see that basically I'm walking along, I'm doing okay, I feel pretty good, and then something happens, and my mind, as fast as I can, before I know it, my mind is delivering me from the problem. It has identified it, it has cleared the path, it has set the desire in place, I'm filled with the sensation of the promise of it, and I'm off. And I've been doing that for 5,000 years. Never suspecting that no matter how many different ways I'm promised the end of that pain, if the pain is in the mix making the promise, it can't bring an end to itself. And it is in the mix because it's part of that order. It's part of that level of mind. So let's look at it because this is, again, in the story, and we'll get back to it.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit guyfinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit guyfinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
We have to change. And when I say change, I'm not talking about changing just the way we think about things, because how many of you are pretty good thinkers when you're not sinking? But come the sinking time, the thinking changes, doesn't it? You know, many of us are masters when there's no problems. As soon as a problem comes, the mastery leaves and we're in the hands of something that promises to master our lives for us. And we don't change ourselves. And the reason that it's important to touch on this is because our world is sinking. It is. It's sinking. This isn't negative. It's sinking. We become a race of beings whose sense of satisfaction is a derivative of what we can own. That's what's happened to us. Now, for the sake of those who are wondering, I'm not denigrating any kind of position at all in life. But I am proving that inside of the way in which we presently look at life, which is through a kind of conspicuous consumption consciousness, that everything about what we do is basically blind to the effect it has on the world around us. Because what we want is what we want. And what it costs to the rest of the world or anyone else, it doesn't matter to us because we think to ourselves our part is so small that none of that really adds up. But I tell you that it does add up, not just in the cumulative way to the planet, but it adds up in a very distinct spiritual, unseen way in which everyone wanders around carrying a certain kind of debt. It's an unseen debt, but it's there. And the idea of this way in which we presently look at how to make ourselves content through acquiring and possessing things doesn't work. It doesn't work. I know it's a brief high. Let's get it out on the table. You know, you've been thinking to yourself, I want this or I want that, and you've wanted it for a long time. Or maybe you're fortunate, you don't have to want stuff for a long time, and you get it. It's pretty cool. You know, it is. It's not bad for a spell. But how many of you recognize that as soon as you get whatever it is, it's not terribly long before what you have gotten gets into you and says, this ain't it, let's get something else. Yes or no? It's true. So, I'm saying, can we use our minds? Can we look at this apart from the reactions or the resistance we have to the fact of what it means to be us on this world and what we've done to it? And look and say, you know what? My path to contentment is the same as the path of conflict with the world in which I'm seeking that contentment. There it is. Because I am in conflict with anyone that challenges what I say I need in order to feel that contentment. Is there a different way? Is there another kind of life whose basis is not oriented around the idea of acquisition and possession, but rather around what we'll call participation? Not acquisition, not possession, participation. Is there something that a human being already has within his or her heart that allows them to be in this relationship called life, not only with themselves, but with everyone else around them and Mother Nature herself, so that that relationship doesn't produce pain or punishment to themselves or anyone else, and at the same time, and much to the heart of the talk, gives that man or woman a sense of well-being that is not determined by whether they have or don't have, whether people approve or don't approve, whether things go right or things go wrong. Because none of those ideas of have, not have, right or wrong, approve or not, every one of those is connected with the idea of possession. How many of you can see there was a bit of a leap? See, if you don't approve me, then I must not be who I take myself to be. So I was possessing this image of myself as being a certain kind of person. You've challenged it. Now I got to go back to the workshop. And across the board, if you examine this that we're talking about, you'll see that our mentality, our sense of self, keep in mind the heart of this talk is there a fearless life versus a life of fear that's trying to bring an end to it? That the very core of us, the way our mind works, produces fear. I'm going to show it to you. Nothing I ever speak about do I speak without showing the facts behind it. And I would add, if you ever listen to someone or you go someplace or you read a book and you get a bunch of highfalutin, fancy schmancy, pie-in-the-sky stuff, and it makes you feel good, but there's nothing through which you can see directly in your own heart the fact of the evidence produced, I say that you're not doing yourself or anyone else any good. Because change is now. By the way, take a nice deep breath. What is it in us? How does it work? What happens that turns us into a creature whose sense of self is validated by what we possess, whether it's our name, the way people think of us, the kind of things we own, the kind of work we do? Because these are the key, the highlights for human beings on planet Earth, and God help the rest of the world trying to be like the West. So I want to look at this with you. I want to show you some of the interior workings of our own mind. And in looking at it, to begin to understand how this fearful life is actually inherent in the activity of our own mind. Why? Because when we see the limitation in something, the invitation is inherent in it. So that the mind that can awaken to itself and see its own activity as being necessarily limited, even though it has been the path to experience up to this point, that same mind in awakening to itself transcends itself by the very fact of its discovery. Then there's no you or anybody else showing some path to some place. The path is unfolding in the very ability of myself to see the functionality of my own being and how it, in this instance, produces fear. So, take a deep breath. I want to talk for a minute about beauty. Our time is going very quickly. We're very fortunate to live where we live, beautiful part of the country. And I dare say there's no one listening that doesn't have a love of beauty in their heart. But beauty, like everything else on this planet, I have a saying that we find the celestial in the common. That like everything else, beauty is a kind of messenger that contained in its very existence is evidence of something that is beyond its existence. And that the path in the moment for the individual aware of such things as this beauty that we're going to talk about, such a person, by their relationship with that beauty, is placed in relationship with what gives rise to that. Now, where I live up here in Southern Oregon, just outside of Grants Pass, we have we have some beautiful giant trees, the incense cedar and the Douglas fir, the sugar pines. And we've had a beautiful spring, lots of water, and wild flowers have been abundant. The pastures are still growing. And all of this beauty that I'm talking about, I don't think we see how fragile it is. And I don't mean fragile in the environmental sense. I mean fragile in relationship to the moment in which we actually see the beauty. Because when we see something that is beautiful, like one of my favorite things to see, I love when the wheat and the tall grass dries out and the wind moves it, you actually see one of the many common forms throughout the universe. You see waves, beautiful waves, moved by something invisible. And is it not moving to see something like that? It is moving. It's fragile because it's that moment. That's it. The breeze stops. The beauty of that moment passes. Now something else takes place, and this is to the heart of the idea of the beauty, is that beauty is something that is never-endingly taking place on a kind of conditional dependency basis. Everything interacting with everything else. That's what beauty is. But when we sit and see beauty, when we're aware of beauty, the distinction between the beauty we see and the beauty that exists inside of us disappears. So the fragility of the beauty that we see becomes a part of our own fragility if we see it as such, which makes us sensitive human beings. Because now we're no longer caught up in the mind, which I'll describe in a moment here, that is forever trying to figure out how to get that beauty into a camera. Not that there's anything wrong with taking pictures. Or have you ever seen something beautiful and the moment you saw it, you thought, I got to go tell somebody about this. Then the beauty isn't the beauty you see, but it's the sense of yourself feeling beautiful for what's been shown to you. And that's not beauty.
Hear Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks 4 times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit GuyFinley.org. That's GuyFinley.org.
The fragility has gone out of it, and this is to the point. Have you ever seen something really beautiful? No matter what it may be, and we can take the most mundane to the most celestial, from the idea of wanting to buy something that you thought was beautiful to seeing something celestial. What does the mind do when for a second, let's just say a person is in this interaction, and that's a key word I want to get in. A person when they're aware of the beautiful moment is seeing something that is living and dying. Remember we talked about the little girl? The waves move in, the waves move out, and there's a pause. There's a relationship in that beauty, in its fragility, that when the person is participating in it, they're participating, and this is a key word now, in something that doesn't have a past. Beauty doesn't have a past. And that's part of what holds us in the rapture. Because in the instant where awareness, untainted, which is synonymous with the direct relationship of it, when it touches that, for a moment we no longer have a past. This is why the breath stops, the inspiration takes place, because for a moment an individual is connected to something that already lives inside of him or her, but for the most part is never present to them because they're so pushed around by the content of their mind doing what? Here it is. Trying to claim it. The mind is an extraordinary instrument. Never think otherwise. But its purpose is not to provide us with who we are and what we do. That is not what the mind is about. The mind inevitably is working through a series of events in itself that I'm going to speak of in a time sense, but it's not really a time sense. It's just occurring. A person sees something beautiful. You look and see a beautiful mirror, throw rug or whatever it is. You see something that catches your eye, something beautiful. Ever see somebody beautiful catch your eye? Now, what happens in the moment where you see something beautiful? It's instantaneous. There's pleasure that's produced by it. That's natural. But the instant that the pleasure is produced inside of the mind, there is a faculty in this order of mind that we presently have that wants to keep the pleasure in place. It wants to stop the movement of beauty and possess the beauty. That's what it does. It can't help itself. That's its nature. That's how thought works. So there's this instant of pleasure, this moment of beauty, and in that split second, the mind, in order to, listen, claim it, frames it. In order to claim that moment, it frames it so it can detain it. Those are your key words. Frame, claim, detain. Let's look at it. I like that. Whatever it is, I like that. Now watch. I want the world to stop now. I want beauty to be, freeze the beauty part. Everything, that's it. Because I want to possess that. Now, what does it say it wants to possess? The mind is pointing out at the mural. It's pointing out at the woman. It's pointing out at the miracle, whatever it says that it sees. But it really isn't seeing that. It's seeing the image that was framed in the mind of that. And as it looks at the image that was framed in the mind, it's extracting from what it framed, the content of the experience, it's taking that out of the picture so that it can continue to experience what it has now claimed. And the moment that the sense of self is predicated upon something that the mind has claimed in order to possess so that my person can feel this pleasure continually, fear is born. And there's no getting around it. Because as long as the mind has this image by which it has defined the sense of self, then if anything threatens the image, in other words, the person or the mural or the possession or whatever it is, anything comes along and threatens that, you're monkeying with me. And don't you mess with me, because why? My life depends upon my toast being lightly browned. You have your problems, I have mine. Do you understand what I'm saying? That this element of fear is a continual product of a mind that produces images through which it can somehow claim the sense that was stored in them in order to go on being me. And now, when that ends, which it does, because like the girl in the story, Saucy, it comes in, it seems to pause, and it goes out, but nothing is really standing still. Everything is going through this process of change, so that when a person looks at something like that, they don't know, because it feels real. This feels good, man. It feels good. I love whatever it is. I love it. And then because the thing isn't what the mind has assigned it as being, I now am attached to something that is going to go through changes. And as it goes through changes, I look for ways to control that which was changing it. How many of you like to try to control other people's behaviors? Raise your hands. Master controllers, one and all. You're just fine as long as you don't change. Unless I've told you how to change, then we're going to be really happy together. There can't be true contentment. There can't be love where there's fear. It's impossible. And to recognize, if we will, in our own mind, the way that it works, frames the moment so it can claim it. It claims it so it can detain it. Is there anybody here who can stop nature? Can you stop the sun? Can you stop the light through the trees? No one can stop anything. But it's a complete act of delusion on the part of a human being that when they get in their mind what they're going to possess in order to give them the power of being whatever it is they've imagined they're going to be, they can't understand that it's an illusion until the pain comes. And then we still don't see it's an illusion because we just go back to sleep and dream up another one. That is limited. Has its place because it's part of the root of experience. I couldn't be speaking to you of these beautiful ideas if experience hadn't led me through seeing the things I'm describing to you. So there's nothing inherently wrong in any given moment apart from the fact that we think that that moment is the only moment there is, and it better well and well freeze right there and not change, which is pretty much the way we work. Now, the other side of that is, and I hinted at it, and we're going to close the part of the talk, this talk, with the idea. If that's a life of fear in which it is forever trying to fix itself by imagining yet something else to claim that just drives us through what I call the circle of self, what is a fearless life? What is this other order of ourselves in which we're no longer subjected to a mind that first produces what will free it and that then becomes the slave of the freedom that it made for itself? What other kind of life is there? And I hinted at it when I talked to you about this beauty, the fragility of this beauty. I talked about the possibility of recognizing from something inside of ourselves that we can be in relationship with the moment. We can be in relationship with whatever it is. And this is what's so truly beautiful about it. Even moments like this. There's nothing that we can't be in relationship with that isn't giving us insight through our awareness into it. Nothing. So it doesn't matter. I'm not saying that there aren't right and wrong and quote things. I'm simply saying that when a person can be aware of himself and understand that the nature of awareness, because it doesn't live from something trying to find itself. Look, were you looking for yourself or that sense of beauty when you found the beauty? Were you looking for that wonderful feeling of love if you happen to have someone in your life and you have a true moment where none of you are, you're not hiding anything from each other, and maybe one of you is actually saying, you know what, I'm a mess. And you love the person for their honesty. You don't look for the moment of honesty, but your awareness of it and the honesty of the beauty, of the integrity of a person who's not lying and hiding things from others, in that moment you share through that awareness. In that moment and movement of that which never was born and never dies. Because that living and dying, that in and out, that pause that isn't a pause but a change, that is the real core of this existence. It is what we're meant to live in and from through our ability to be present to ourselves. But we can't be present to ourselves as long as we're trying to possess ourselves. So the answer is this, and it all leads up to this. We're talking now about the difference between what happens when we realize that this part of ourselves, and if you feel fear, worry, stress, anger, any of these negative states, when they flood through and they capture you, it is an indication that you're trying to protect something. So when we feel those moments in which this state of protection surges in and tries to drive us to a promise to free ourselves through what it names will do it, instead of that continuation of that possession mentality, we participate in the release mentality. The release mentality. This is where letting go comes in. And this is where the risk, the real risk is, because we're so used to knowing ourselves through saving ourselves in time, that the idea of entering into a timeless moment, my awareness of it, and not letting myself jump in and tell me what to do and how to fix it, is terrifying to that nature. But to who we are, it is beauty itself. And we can, anytime we want to, do it right now, because we have to bring the talk to a close. You can wake up and start participating in this moment, not in thought, but through your awareness of it, and allow that awareness to help you release, 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 let go, let go. And then you watch how the fearless life that has always been present begins to dawn inside of you, and the life of fear begins to fade. You must do the work.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit guyfinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love. The brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.